Hello and welcome to today's episode of The Quad Shot, where we help you down and digest the day's most pertinent cancer news. It's June 1st, 2020. Welcome to The Quadcast. Let's dive in. First up, a flare to remember. The most common side effect to anticipate from most palliative radiation treatments to uncomplicated painful bone metastases is a transient pain flare. A landmark trial published in 2015 demonstrated a significant decrease in the incidence of pain flare with 8 milligrams of oral dexamethasone for 5 days, starting on the day that the patient received 8 gray times 1. Here's a strikingly similar double-blind study that prospectively randomized 295 patients receiving 8 gray times 1 or 4 gray times 5 to 6 for painful bone metastases to one of three arms, starting on day 1 of radiation. Arm 1 was dexamethasone 8 milligrams for 4 days. Arm 2 was dexamethasone 8 milligrams for 1 day, followed by placebo for 3 days. And arm 3 was placebo for 4 days. The primary endpoint, again, was incidence of pain flare, defined as a 25% increase in opioid intake and or a 2-point increase on a 0 to 10 pain scale that, and now this is important, had to return to baseline within 14 days or else it was considered pain progression. The incidence of pain flare was 38% in arm 1, 27% in arm 2, and 39% in arm 3. However, single dose versus 4 days of dexamethasone had slightly higher rates of pain progression, such that rates of pain flare or progression were 52% in arm 1, 50% in arm 2, and 63% in arm 3. All of this to say, there wasn't a significant improvement with prophylactic dexamethasone. What 4 days of dexamethasone did achieve was less pain flare on days 2 to 5, as compared to arms 2 and 3, which may be important if someone is struggling to lie on the table for 5 days of treatment. Though in that situation, you might ask yourself, is single fraction not an option? The bottom line is, a second large phase 3 trial failed to confirm a significant advantage in pain flare prevention with prophylactic dexamethasone given with conventional palliative radiation for painful bone metastases. Thanks to Vander Linden, Red Journal, 2020. Up second, the C word. The vast majority of men treated with brachytherapy for prostate cancer see a PSA nadir less than or equal to 0.2. And since PSA nadir following external beam radiation isn't expected to drop so low, what level should we be looking to achieve? This large multi-institution retrospective review of PSA nadir following LDR brachy with or without external beam radiation for prostate cancer of all risk levels ask what PSA level at 4 years indicates long-term disease control. That means patients who recurred before 4 years were excluded. So why the somewhat arbitrary time point? Well, mainly to avoid the messiness of benign PSA bounces. First of all, 77% of remaining patients had a PSA less than or equal to 0.2 at 4 years, and they achieved remarkable rates of freedom from recurrence at 10 and 15 years, respectively, 99% and 96%. Those rates following 4-year PSA values between 0.2 and 0.5 were 94% and 87%. And if your 4-year PSA was between 0.5 and 1, the value was 86% and 78%. However, if your four-year PSA value was greater than one, your 10-year rate of freedom from occurrence was 48%, and your 15-year rate was 33%. The bottom line is, the author suggests a PSA level less than or equal to 0.2 at 4 years out from brachytherapy indicates, that's right, the patient may just be cured from prostate cancer. Thanks to Crook, Radiotherapy Oncology 2020. Up next, GYN Guide. It's taken a while for GYN cancers to embrace the IMRT era, but now that it has, ASTRO has stepped up with new cervical cancer consensus guidelines. So what's changed? IMRT is no holds recommended for post-op treatment and even conditionally recommended for definitive treatment, particularly when delivering simultaneous dose escalation to intact involved lymph nodes. In both cases, the advantage being better side effect profiles, not better disease control. For brachytherapy, a strong recommendation is given for CT or MRI-guided volume-based planning, including a conditional recommendation to bump the cumulative EQD2 up from greater than or equal to 80 gray to greater than or equal to 85 gray when using such volume-based planning for poorly responding large tumors that are greater than 4 centimeters. Finally, Table 7 provides a good summary of cumulative dose constraints. The bottom line is, here's a nice updated guideline on cervical cancer radiation. Thanks to Chino, Practical Radiation Oncology, 2020. Up next, tract changes. When delivering post-op SRS for resected brain metastases, covering the surgical tract may seem like a trivial matter for superficial tumors, but what about deep tumors? This retrospective study, published in Practical Radiation Oncology 2020 by Shi et al., came from Stanford and took a look at patterns of failure for 66 deep, defined as greater than 1 centimeter from the surface, resected brain metastases treated with post-op SRS with or without coverage of the surgical tract. Notably, there were several biases in the group that did not have tract coverage, 45%, including more breast cancer histology, more prior radiation, infratentorial location, and greater absolute tumor depth. The main take-home was that both cavity and surgical tract failures were too infrequent to show a significant difference. The risk of tract recurrence was 9% without coverage and 1.5% with coverage at 12 months. However, there did appear to be a significantly higher rate of leptomeningeal failure without tract coverage. The bottom line is, the overall risk of surgical tract failure for deep brain metastases is low when omitted from the SRS target volume, so balancing the risk of toxicity should be a careful consideration. Up next, walking uphill both ways to school. You don't need a survey to tell you that taking board examinations is no fun, no matter the specialty branding. What's unique to radiation oncology? Suffering the process 4 times over on many subjects not formally taught or practiced day to day. This recent ARO survey, as published in Practical Radiation Oncology 2020 by Campbell et al., looked at 2019 to 2020 graduates and quantifies the pain inflicted by incessant exams that, ironically, appear to confer a significant detriment on resident physician education. Over half of respondents used quote-unquote research or elective blocks for study time, and over half of those without protected study time used a median of 1 week's vacation to study for each year of exams. Remember, that's a third of standard annual allotted vacation. It's no surprise, then, that on a Likert-type scale, residents reported a moderately negative impact on research productivity clinical development, family life, and mental health. The bottom line is, look, board examinations are an important component of board certification, but maybe in the 2020s, we can find a less resource-draining mechanism of ensuring competency of RADONC constituents. Up next, RTD2. In this Chinese Patterns of Failure study, published in Cancer Medicine 2020 by Zhu et al., patients were evaluated that underwent D2 resection for gastric cancer and regional recurrences at 19%, as well as anastomotic site recurrences at 6%, far outweighed recurrences in either the remnant stomach at 0% or gastric bed at 1%. The authors thus conclude that after a D2 operation, radiation volumes can safely omit the gastric bed and remnant stomach in the setting of negative margins and lack of adjacent organ involvement, with the goal of reducing functional toxicity. Up next, artifactual. A sacrifice in local control following lung and liver 4D SBRT. This novel inquiry suggests that the presence of artifacts during reconstruction, either doubly displaying or failing to display, has a more significant detriment on local control than any other measured variable, including target volume and target motion, thanks to Sinker, 2020. Finally, more than an announcement. We now have a full publication describing the preliminary results indicating that remdesivir significantly shortens time to recovery from COVID-19 with a numerical improvement in survival when compared to placebo. Thanks to Beagle, New England Journal of Medicine, 2020. This concludes today's episode of The Quad Shot. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and subscribing to our podcast. Also, check out our website at www.quadshotnews.com and subscribe to our newsletter. We'll catch you next time.